Good morning, everybody. Let's learn today. I want to just share how excited I'm about today's shir. Just to get that off my chest. And now I just want to thank the sponsors for today's shir. First of all, I want to thank there's an anonymous sponsor, Lerufur Shlema, Daniel Halevi, Ben Bracha, Chana Leia. Mitzvah Hashem, the procedure should go well and smoothly. Mitzvah Hashem, also there's a Baz is sponsoring Refuah Shlema Shlomo Yisrael Ben Sara, continued Refuah and Mechael and Chael of Shlomo Meir Mitzvah Hashem. Also today is being sponsored by Alan Stamets, Le'ilu Nishmas Rasha Bas Reb Shimon, Alan's aunt, whose yahrzeit is today, Boy Bayom, today. Also want to thank the Kelners who are sponsoring very kindly Le'ilu Nishmas Moshe Eliyahu Ben Tzvi Shalom, my father, whose yahrzeit is tonight. Thank you very much for thinking of that. And also for the engagement, it's where David Foyer is sponsoring for the engagement of Eitan Foyer, his nephew, to our own Rebecca Greenspan. So, Mazel Tov. All the mishpachas come together. We should have continued smachos to celebrate and occasions and milestones to be together with each other for, God willing. Okay, so we have a man of dreams. Yosef is the man of dreams, we know that. But it's interesting to note, how many dreams does he in fact encounter in his life? How many dreams does the Torah tell us about Yosef? Interestingly enough, that's a great question. It's actually a debate between five and six. Because you see, Yosef has two dreams at the beginning of his life when he's a youngster. He meets two people in prison who have two separate dreams, and then he meets Pharaoh. And Pharaoh has these two/one dreams, and the whole uniqueness of Yosef was his ability to be able to tell Pharaoh that it was, in fact, one dream. So we have ostensibly five dreams which surround and encompass Yosef's life. And the question is, just the question we're going to try to deal with today is there any way in the world that those dreams have anything to do with each other? I mean, say, is there a way to look through Yosef's life and view that there's something, there's a theme, not just through the dreams that he dreamt, but through the dreams that he looked at of other people's. Is there somehow a connection between all the sets of them? The three sets of two, ostensibly, that it seems to be keep coming up in his life. There are very few people who deal with this. Rav Foreman has a very fascinating series on all these parashios where he does believe that Yosef's ability to interpret the dreams of Pharaoh is based on his life experience. There's a very fascinating mahalach. We're not going to go into that right now. I'd like to just, let's go through each of those three sets of dreams, consider some questions, and work our way backwards through with a particular theme. So the first set of dreams we read about yesterday in Parshas Vayeshev, where Yosef arrives as a young man, and he tells his brothers and he tells his father the first set of dreams. Here's how it works. So if you look in the first source, we're going to look at the psukim in the beginning of Vayeshev. We're going to consider just the dreams themselves, Pasuk Zion and Pasuk Tes. So Yosef tells this dream to his brother in Pasuk Zion. He says, "V'hine anachnu ma'alamim alumim v'soich hasadeh, v'hine komo alum asi v'gam nitzavah." So we were gathering grain in the field, and my grain stood up, my bundle stood up, and remained standing, and all your grains now submitted themselves and bowed to my bundle of grain. Fascinating. That's the first dream. They weren't so keen on this. They said, are you going to rule over us? Are you going to be the king over us? Not so good. The second dream, skipping one pasuk in pasuk tes, behold, I have another dream. And the sun and the moon and the 11 stars were bowing down to me. And again, in this time, it's his father doesn't appreciate this dream, and that's the end of the saga. These dreams are very strange on a number of accounts. First of all, why two dreams for the same thing? Essentially, meaning if this is a notion of dominion, this is the notion that Yosef's going to be in control of everybody, then one dream should suffice, right? You give him one dream and keep repeating that dream. Give him the same dream again and again and again. It doesn't seem to be that that's what's happening. It seems to be that it's two separate dreams. The context of the dreams are very, very separate. Yes?
The first dream was a little different than the second.
It was. So apparently there's something else going on. The setting of the dreams is very different. There's no setting to the second dream. The context of the first dream is the field. We have the extra additional figures of the sun and the moon in the dream. So there are different. There are differences. So apparently there's two things being told to us. But just
to
be.
The first one is people. The second one is the universe.
Well, the first one's actually grain. There's no people in either of the dreams. You know, which is strange, right? There's no people in either of the dreams. It's the grain piles, and it is the celestial bodies. Just one basic question over here. What was the profession of the brothers of Yosef? What did they do? They're shepherds. That means they looked after what? They looked after sheep. There are no sheep in these dreams. Do you notice that? Isn't that interesting? Just a basic question. They weren't farmers. What's he talking about grain? They don't deal with grain. The only grain they deal with is what goes in the food trough. Right? Is that fascinating? I'm using the word farmer as an agricultural farmer as opposed to a shepherd. But you're right. I mean, this type of shepherds don't deal with grain. Right? Isn't that strange? I mean, like the vehicle of description of these dreams doesn't seem to be fitting the setting. Yes. Okay, good. So there are many mepharshim that suggest, as AB suggests, that the two dreams seem to be suggesting. Now, Schwab talks about this, that the one is the physical setting and one is the spiritual setting, that Yosef's going to have two crowns, the crown of spiritual leadership, the crown of physical leadership. You're 100% right. There's a lot to talk about in that. I don't want to address any answers yet. I just want to just appreciate the difficulties of these dreams. Very unusual. Also, just an interesting thing over here. Does Yosef interpret these dreams?
No.
Who interprets these dreams? The first dream, the brothers interpret. Take a look at Pasuk Ches. Vayomru lo yechov, hamaloich timloich aleinu imashol timshol banu. Are you going to rule over us? Are you going to have dominion over us? Yosef didn't interpret them. The brothers interpreted them. They said, Yosef, is this what you are insinuating? That doesn't work. Number two, look in Pasuk Yud. Vayisaper el aviv elechov, vayigar boy aviv. His father got angry. Vayomelo, ma'a chalam azer shechalamta, havona vo aniva imchova achecho lishtachavo eslocho arzo. Am I and your mother and your brothers going to bow in front of you to the ground? Meaning, who's interpreting the dream? The father. Yosef hasn't interpreted these dreams. Isn't that fascinating? We all say, oh, Yosef's there and he's busy, you know, waving the flag of, you know, look at me. And he didn't say anything. He just repeated the dreams. Isn't that interesting? They are saying that about him. Very unusual. Yosef does lots of interpreting later on in his life. Right now, he hasn't done anything. He's just said the dreams.
Pretty self-explanatory.
Not necessarily. Well, go. Why is it grain? You know what I'm saying? Like there's a lot more there than there meets the eye. Part of the reason why they're getting upset is because one of the reasons why people dream is because of what they think about during the day, right? So you spend all your time thinking about being in control of other people, and then you're going to dream about being in control of other people. So what they were essentially saying to him is like, why are you thinking about control all the time? That's ultimately what they're asking. It sounds like that. But again, it's not so simple what's really going on over here. Let's move to the second set of dreams. We meet in the prison. We meet the butler and the baker. Or let's be more careful. We meet the Sar HaOfim and the Sar HaMashkim. We meet the minister of drinks and the minister of bakery, of the king's bakery. Here's their dreams. Let's take a look at this. If you flip over to the next section, Voracious Mem. This section is the end of Parshas Vayeshev. This is the last chapter of what we read yesterday. We're going to start from Pasuk Ches. Yosef awakes in the morning. He's in charge. He's essentially the second in command of the entire prison. And what he does, he is now confronting these two very higher up. You know, this is white collar crime right now. We're not talking about these are the king's ministers, yeah. So they have a little bit of an issue in the morning. He says, "Vayomru elov in pasuk ches, chalom chalamnu uforser en osay." That we don't have any solutions to the dreams. Vayomer aleim Yosef haloy elokim pisronim sipru nali. God has the answer. Tell me. Vayisaper she'asar hamashkim es chalamo li Yosef vayomer loy b'chalami v'hinei gefen lefonai. The first dream is there's this vine in front of me. Uvagefen shlosha sarigim. And in this vine, there are three branches. Vini parakaporachas also nitzau hivshilu ashkolosea anovim. And as I'm standing there, it starts ripening, and the grapes start growing. Vekos parabiyadi vaykaches anovim vayeschot vayeschat oisam el kois paroi vaytenes a kois al kaf paroi. And I squeeze those grapes, put them in the cup, and I put it onto the palm of Pharaoh. That's the first dream. The second dream is, if we skip down, that if we skip to Pasuk Tes Zion, number 16, Vayar Sarofim Kitov Pasar. There's the baker, or the ministry of baking, sees that it's a good interpretation. Vayomer al Yosef, Afani bechalami v'nei shloisha saleh chori al roshi. I have three baskets, open baskets on my head. V'vesale al yon mikor ma'achal paroi ma'asei ofe va'oif ochelos amin asal me'al roshi. And the birds are eating the bread out of the basket on my head. And so Yosef explains both the dreams. Now, he explains it a little differently. The dream of the Sar Hamashkim, he interprets that ultimately he's going to be reinstated to his position. When it comes to the Sar Ofim, and he is going to be also, his head is also going to be lifted up, but in the sense that he didn't want to hear about, that is that he's going to be hanged. Right, so these two, it's interesting, these are two very similar sounding esoteric dreams, and somehow Yosef has the solution to each of these dreams, and it's very strange because the dreams sound somewhat similar, right? We have these three and three, those are the 3 days, and then the birds are eating the bread, and the grapes are growing. So what's interesting to note in these dreams is that there's an almost like a movement in the opposite direction, right? There's a movement in the opposite direction. We have the vine which is empty, and the vine grows the grapes. We have the baskets which are full, and the baskets are emptying of bread, right? Which just seems to be a direct explanation of these dreams. But the strange thing about the whole business is the following, and this is where we're going to just sort of leave off as a question. The Chazal tell us, why were they in prison? They weren't slipping money under the counter. They weren't doing side business in the king's court. It was very simple. They were slacking on their responsibilities. There was a pebble found in the king's bread. That was the problem with the Sarama Ha'ofim. And there was a fly found in the cup of Pharaoh. Now, if you think about this for just a quick second, who is more liable? Who is more liable to get killed? Now, what's interesting over here is, just to think about this for a second, we're not talking about the baker or the butler. We're talking about the person who comes to the king and presents the king with a finished product. This is the person who wears the garb and walks in. He's not doing the work in the kitchen.
But he's supervising.
Right, so he's supervising it. But who is he more likely to notice, the pebble or the fly?
The fly,
because the fly is on the top of the wine. The Sar Hamashkim, in fact, is more liable for death than the Sar Ha'ofim. And something switches. Yosef's answer to the dream is the answer to this. How does Yosef see this? And why does Yosef put himself into these dreams? We'll see that in a second. Okay, that's the second set of dreams. Now we enter into our parasha. Parashas Mikhais, as we're about to enter, is the last set of dreams, or maybe not set of dreams. And Pharaoh has this interesting description over here. Let's just do a quick recap of the dreams, and then part of the problems that we're going to encounter, and we'll work our way backwards. In these dreams, this is in Bereshis, Perek Mem Aleph. This is to be fair. We saw at the beginning of the parasha. Pharaoh's dreaming. He's standing by the river. That sounds right because that's where he lives. That's what he does every day. So he sees these beautiful, handsome cows. They're standing in the marsh, in the reeds. And then these weak, thin cows come and stand next to the fat cows, next to the river. What happens is the weak cows, the thin cows, consume the fat cows, and Paro wakes up. And he goes to sleep and he dreams a second dream. And there are the grains there, which have these very full ears, which are good and healthy. And close to them sprout another 7 ears which are thin and scorched. And they consume them, and Paro wakes up. And then Paro calls all his astronomers, and nobody is able to explain it to him. And finally, the Sar HaMashkim says, you know, when I was in prison, there was this little young man, and he was, you know, he gave me a good interpretation of the dream. No way could he have known this. And Paro brings him in, and Yosef brings this interpretation.
The sixth is based on the same thing as the first.
So it sounds like the dreams are almost a verbatim repetition of one another, which kind of is strange, right? Meaning to say, why would Pharaoh have the same dream again twice? If you're going into numbers, it sounds like it's too much, right? It's the same concept being revised. There are actually details which differ between the two dreams, which is going to be important to us. But there's lots of questions we can have about this, because when Paro asks Yosef what's going on in this dream, it's interesting that not only does Yosef give a radical interpretation, but Yosef also gives him advice. It's interesting. The whole thing is very interesting. You know, if I were in Yosef's shoes, I would say, you know, I just walked out of prison. I would answer the question being asked, and I would say, thank you, Your Majesty, and step backwards right after that, right? And I would keep quiet. Nobody's asking this impudent young man to tell Pharaoh what to do. That wasn't part of the question. The question was, what do the dreams mean? Okay, so he writes, this is his moment, right? The problem is that generally speaking, in the times of monarchs, if you said the wrong thing, you just, you know, that was your last chance. Pharaoh was not asking for economic advice here. And Yosef seems very comfortable telling him the policies of the next few years, which is really strange. Also, like, the Midrash tells us that the astrologers of Pharaoh had some pretty interesting interpretations. You know, they talked about how he was going to have seven daughters and then lose seven daughters. He was going to fight seven wars and going to lose seven wars. And you have to ask yourselves, you know, these folks were obviously employed by the king of Egypt because they were pretty good at their trades. But, like, they couldn't work it out. That, like, you know, we're dealing with fat and thin cows and, you know, healthy and scorched, ears of wheat. You couldn't work out. It has to do something with agriculture, something with food. Like, you know, like, no, daughters and wars and, you know, like, really? Like, you know, like, just give it a guess at least, folks. You know, like, Yosef, this is not, you know, he didn't just discover America here. It was like, this was not exactly, we could have worked this out. You know, like, I assume if we'd been given these dreams and we didn't know the end of the story, I'm assuming in this room some of us would have come up with famine, right? I mean, like, this is not rocket science over here. So, like, what is Yosef doing that the astrologers just couldn't crack, right? Which is so strange.
You have to say that the policies inherited in the...
Okay, so we're going to get there in a second. So that's answering the first question. It sounds like maybe Yosef's response must be part of the dream. Right? Sounds like if Yosef's... Just coming back, there's just two questions to differentiate. The first question is why is Yosef inserting himself into his suggestion into this dream? And number two is why couldn't the astrologers get the answer? So addressing the first question, it sounds like in the direction we have to go in over here, is apparently Yosef's interpretation, his advice, is part of the interpretation. Is that interesting? Meaning, apparently Yosef's suggestion of agricultural policy is going to be part of the interpretation of the dream. It was what Paro asked for. Right? That's what we're going to have to get towards. And it's going to be strange to work out where in the dreams Yosef saw himself then. Yes?
But when the Chumash lists Paro's dreams, mm-hmm. It doesn't say Vatel Kalna. It doesn't say that the cows looked like the...
Yes, you're right. It's correct. So, Mr. Siegel, you're right.
So now we've added food.
You're right. So it is interesting that when Pharaoh repeats the dreams, there are numerous things that he adds and subtracts. And we don't have the time to go through all those details because there's a long list of things that he adds and subtracts to the dreams. And some of them are red herrings. Let's forget that Pharaoh even adds the eating. Still, we're dealing with grain and we're dealing with cow. And they're fat and they're thin and they're consumed, whether it says eat or not. It sounds like agriculture. It sounds like, it sounds like Egypt's, you know, food is at stake. So let's dive a little deeper in. Also, another thing we have to think about is, you know, Pharaoh is obviously very disturbed by this dream, right? That we can see. And apparently, whatever the folks in his pantheon are saying, he's not happy with him, but suddenly Yosef says it and you know, bing, the light bulb goes on. Something about Yosef is what he's saying rings true in a way that nobody else says it. Now, if you're desperate for interpretation, why is what they're saying not working? So that's the questions we're going to deal with. So just to recap before we dive in, because this is so exciting. We're standing before a precipice of so much. There's so much to appreciate over here. This is revolutionary by what we're about to see in these dreams. But just to appreciate this, we've talked about the two dreams in his youth, the two dreams that he meets in jail, and finally the 2/1 dream that is about, that he meets when he finally it really matters when he's in the court of Pharaoh, and can he change that? So here we go. Let's start at the end and work our way back to the beginning. Okay, we're going to move backwards from the last dream of Pharaoh and move our way backwards into his youth. So the Mephoreshim debate this wildly as to what's going on in Yosef and Pharaoh's dream over here. I'd like to do 3 tiers, each one deepening in levels of significance, and then we'll be able to move backwards. The first, which I heard in the name of Rabbi Isaac Bernstein quotes, and I found it in a number of sources, there's a very fascinating interpretation. And that is the following. Let's take a look at the source. The next source is in source 5. It's to be found in the Sefer Bar Pischi on Parashas Miketz. It's found elsewhere as well. This just happens to be one of the concise readings of it. He says a very interesting suggestion. He says, Vayikatz, Vayishan, Vayachalom Shenis. Pharaoh woke up in the middle. Now, if it's supposed to be, as Yosef says, Chalom Paro Echadu, it's one dream, why was Pharaoh waking up? If it's one dream, why did it happen twice? So he says, Lo ne'emar kan v'inei chalom. When Pharaoh woke up, it doesn't say at the end of the first dream, this was a dream, like it says at the conclusion of the whole section. Kevasof ha'chalom, at the very end. Maybe Pharaoh dreamed that Pharaoh woke up in the dream and went back to sleep in the dream. Is that interesting? So really, Paro was dreaming the whole time. And when he describes that to his staff, they didn't get that. They thought he really woke up. And that's why they were trying to interpret. And there was 2 separate dreams. Yosef realized that the awakening was actually part of the dream. Now, why was awakening part of the dream? What could that mean? What does it mean that Paro needs to do? To avert the problems in the dream, Paro needs to wake up. That means that Paro needs to do something. Says Yosef, he has something to do. Do you see what's happening over here? Meaning, the action is Paro's waking up, which was part of the dream. The other people figured that this was, in fact, exterior, that the quotation marks had closed and opened again. It was one long quotation. Just a fascinating point of here. Problem. Yossi was able to understand that particular point. Yes, Ira.
Problem. The Torah is telling us, it doesn't tell us he went to sleep the first time. It just said it starts off, he's in a dream.
Correct. Dreams always start when you're in the middle of them.
No, but the Torah...
Correct. Okay, no, I'm just as an interesting point, yes.
The Torah then tells you, and Paro woke. Not Paro's dream that he woke. The Torah says Paro
correct,
woke.
And the part of the dream.
And the Torah specifically.
Correct, and Ira at the end of it. Just to be clear. At the end of this, he's aware of that. At the end of this, it says when he woke up the second time, it says v'hinei chalom, and the dream was completed.
That's a different
so therefore, question. His point is the fact that the Torah does not conclude and say v'hinei chalom, it was not yet a dream. That's what his suggestion is. Take it or leave it. This is a very fascinating interpretation, which says to Yosef then that Pharaoh needs help. He needs a suggestion. Well, let me tell you something. in my great experience of leading countries below the Nile, let me tell you what we should do. Right, so that's what Yosef suggests. Fascinating idea, but it gets deeper than that. That's a blip on the radar. Let's dig deeper. Yosef explains if it's really one dream. He says, well, why is it that the dream was repeated twice? Why do we need cows and grains? What does Yosef say? What's his reasoning? He tells Pharaoh. He says, because what Hashem is doing, is going to be happening very, very fast. So let's say the actual words over here. I want actually just to appreciate what's really going on over here. Thank you. And the repetition of the dream twice to Pharaoh. Ki nachon hadavar me'im ha'elokim u'memaher ha'elokim la'asasoi. Because God is hurrying to do this dream. Okay. So that's why it had to be repeated in 2 separate vehicles. Now let's think about this for a second. Not everything in dream 1 was repeated in dream 2. Which means not everything in the dream is actually going to be fast and done by God. And the one thing that's missing between dream 1 and dream 2 is the fact that in dream 1, it describes that the two cows, the two sets of cows, the weak cows came and stood right next to the other cows. When it comes to the grain, it just says they grew nearby. They didn't move closely, they didn't move proximate to the other cows, isn't it? To other grains. Isn't that interesting? Apparently the one difference between dream set 1 and dream set 2 is whether the weaker element is moving right next to the fatter element. And because that's not repeated, that means to say that God's not doing that. What do you think it could mean that the weaker elements, the seven weaker elements, are standing next to the seven fatter elements? What could that mean? So the answer is that the solution to the weakness is the fatness. Meaning to say, well, the fatness is, if you're able to put the two next to each other, if you're able to take the fatness, the fat cows, and they're right next to the thin cows, maybe you can somehow overcome what's going to happen. But when it comes to the grains, that doesn't happen, which means that God isn't doing that for you. God is essentially telling you, the solution exists of combining the years, of using the one set of years for the other years, but I'm not doing it. So who's doing it?
You.
Isn't that interesting? Meaning to say, you're right, the grain can't move, but it can't eat either.
Yeah.
So in whatever's happening in this dream, this animated grain over here should be doing some sort of animated action like the cows were, and it isn't. Now what he's saying is, this is what the Meshech Chochma, Rav Meir Simcha Dvinsky, is saying. The element which is not repeated in the dream is the moving closer of these two entities, one next to the other. Which means to say, Hashem is leaving the gap, not for God to do this, but for humans to do this. Who's going to do this? Yosef says, I have a suggestion. Part of the interpretation is, how do you break the cycle of the seven and seven? Is by putting the two together. God's given us the clue, but he didn't tell us that he's going to do it, because he needs us to do it. Isn't that fascinating that the action key is embedded in it? Just a very interesting and subtle point that the Meshech Chochma was saying. Yes, Steve.
It sounds like the action is that the healthy cows have to go next to the...
Yes.
But that's not...
The you're right, you're correct. So that is a good error on this interpretation of the Meshech Chochma. It sounds like the solution would be the fat cows coming to the thin cows, not the thin cows coming to the fat cows. Also, it is an interesting question on this as well, is that it sounds like when they consume them, they can't be seen that they're consumed. So it doesn't seem, right? So there's still questions.
They didn't get better.
So there are questions on this approach, but nonetheless, I thought it was a very fascinating interpretation. Let's go a little further. And this over here, this next approach is what we've been all building up towards. And this is going to take us through everything else. This is where it all happens. This is the interpretation of the Maharil Diskin. Maharil Diskin says such a phenomenal thing. Phenomenal. Why is it that all the people in Pharaoh's court could not think this was about 7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine? There was a very obvious reason that nobody is willing to risk themselves by saying that to Pharaoh.
They didn't want to give him bad news.
Because they looked into the future and they saw. No, the bad news, his daughter's dying in the wars, were also bad news. They looked into the future and they did in fact see 7 years of plenty. But did they see 7 years of famine? And the answer is no. Why did they not see 7 years of famine? Why did they not see when they looked into the... Because in the end of the day, there were only 2 years of famine. There were only 2 years of famine. Which means, when they looked into the future did not match the dreams they were talking about. 7 years of famine and 7 years of 7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine. It was 7 and 2. The famine stopped when Yaakov Avinu came down to Mitzrayim. Which is remarkable. So they weren't willing to risk themselves to say something which they knew would not be true. Now let's think about this. Says the Maharal Diskin, a person who's working in, we'll call it in the workings or the interpretations of black magic, which is what they're doing. They're looking at the stars, they're stargazing, they're seeing the spiritual elements unfolding as they're about to flow through this world. That's what they're looking at. When you look at that, you're only able to actually penetrate to what will actually happen. You can't penetrate even deeper to what could potentially happen. Potentially, there were supposed to be 7 years of each. There were supposed to be 7 years of plenty, and there were supposed to be 7 years of famine. Only a person who has the access of Elohim, who has God helping him, can see the real potential, even though it won't actualize itself. But now Yosef has to explain to Pharaoh, well, why exactly did the potential of 7 years of famine actually get abrogated and end up at two? Why would it be that what potentially celestially could be didn't come to be? And the answer is because, why did it stop?
Because of Yaakov.
Because Yaakov, you know, came down. Well, there's only one way Yaakov's going to come down. Let me give you an agricultural solution to your society. You see what Yosef is doing? I am the solution as to the reason why the dreams will shift from 7 to 2. Yosef is the interpretation of the dream. If you listen to me, we can move this, we can crank this down from 7 years of famine to 2 years of famine. But you have to listen to me. Yosef's word is the interpretation of the dream. Crazy. Great. He is actually telling Pharaoh why the potential is not going to hit the actual only if you listen. That's what Yosef's doing. This is not unsolicited advice. This was the interpretation of the dream. And it goes further than that. You want to, what the Maharal Diskin says, this is remarkable. He says, that's why in the Haggadah, it's interesting that the Haggadah says, it says, is on Yenu. Remember when we were darshaning out the Pesukim in Parshas Kisavo, in the Arami Avedavi, in the Haggadah, it says on Yenu. I think it's on that particular word, it says, Zu Prishas Derech Eretz. This is the fact that Israel, and they were under such terrible pressure, families couldn't carry on being together, and children are not being born in the Israelite camp because of the terrible physical and emotional pressure that they were experiencing Vayeda Elokim, God knew, Zu Prishas Derech Eretz, God knew, this was the fact that families couldn't be together, and there were no more children being born in Israel. And it's like, it sounds like a little bit of a disconnected drasha that's being made. You know, God knows, okay, God knows, and this is the children who couldn't be born, says the Maharal Diskin. What did Yosef say? Yosef said, the reason why I have access to this dream is because Elohim, God knows the solution to dreams, meaning as opposed to your astronomers who can only see what actually will be. Only God can see the real potential of what could have been but wasn't. Vayeda Elohim, God knew. What did God knew? God knew the children who should have been, could have been, would have been, and weren't. That's what our God is telling us. Vayeda Elohim, God knew what should have been and wasn't. That's the same Elohim over here that Yosef's saying. He saw what could have been about the 7 years and it wasn't. Why? Because of me. Now this is interesting because what ultimately is happening over here in the Maharal Diskin's thought process is just a fascinating thing. Is that the dream isn't so much about a apparition or a view of the future. The dream is also an action key to get there. Isn't that interesting? Meaning to say, as opposed to what the astronomers were essentially saying is, this is what the dream is saying will happen. He's actually saying, this is how we're going to get there. That's what Yosef's ultimately saying. Is part of the dream is the action necessary to get to the next stage. Whichever of these three interpretations it is, whether it's the Paro waking up in the middle, whether it's the proximity of the years to one another, or whether it's like the Maharal Diskin says, that it's the disparity between the potential and the actual, which is to be found in the person who's the leveraging this particular episode. Let's try to follow that through. Meaning to say, if it's true that dreams aren't simply just the future, dreams are actually the key to action of what to do to get there. Let's reverse our way backwards now. Now let's come back to the jail. Okay, now we're back in jail. Yosef's at the head of the jail. He's looking after all these folks. How many perpetrators were there against Pharaoh in his eating? How many people were in jail because of their negligence when it came to feeding Pharaoh? So we always think two. And that's the problem. There's more than two. And this is quite something. You know, once you hear this, there's nowhere to read this again. There weren't just two people in jail. Listen to this. This is the words of the Malbim. And I left out this first pasuk, because pasuk hey in this parak. There were four people in jail. This is just groundbreaking. I'm sorry, I apologize. I left this pasuk out. I just want to read this pasuk to you and just to appreciate this. Vayachalmu chalom shneim. They both dreamed a dream. Who were in jail again? The Sar HaOifim, the Sar HaMashkin, the minister of baked goods, and the minister of drinks. They dreamed a dream, both of them. Ish chalamo balala echad, ish kefisron chalamoi. Each person dreamed the dream or the answer to their dream. Hamashke va'ofe. Who's the mashke and the ofe? Mashke is?
The guy who...
The cupbearer. And the ofe. And the baker. Do you notice that it wasn't the Sarah mashke and it wasn't Sarah ofim? It was just the person who did the baking and just the person who did the preparing of the wine. Asher lemelech Mitzrayim, asher asurim eves asar, because they were also there. There were four people in jail. Now let's think about this for a moment. Let's just appreciate what's going on. There were the people in the kitchen, and there were the people in the court. The people in the court were the sarim. They were the ministers. The ministers are the ones who administrated and gave the king and served the king the food. And they're the people in the kitchen who prepared the food. Let's go back to liabilities for a second. Who is more liable in the case where pebbles found in the king's bread? Who of those two people, the person in the kitchen or the person in the court? The physical baker, the guy in the kitchen, is more liable because he got the stone in there. The person presenting the king has no way to know, unless he's going to x-ray that bread, he has no way to know that there's a pebble in the king's bread. Fair? So the liable party over here is not the server, but the one in the kitchen. Let's go back to the drinks for a second. There are two people. There's the person preparing the drink, and they're squeezing and preparing the drink, and there's the person who's serving the drink. Who's more liable when the fly is found in the drink?
The server,
because that didn't happen early on. And even if it did happen early on, there is a way for the person presenting the cup to check in the cup and make sure that the fly wasn't there. So therefore, in terms of liabilities, when we'll call in the servants and the ministers. When it comes to the servants level, the baker is the liable one. When it comes to the servers, the drink's master is the one who's liable. Now let's enter this again. What is happening over here is something quite remarkable. What is happening over here is they start dreaming these dreams and they get the sense that there is an opposite movement in these dreams. Right, the person, the Sar HaMashkim, the drinks master knows that his dream is going from empty to full. Right, he sees that the vine is empty and it's growing, and the grapes are growing on this vine. And he's about to serve the king. Right, the baker sees that he is going empty. He sees that the bread is full in the baskets, but the baskets are being eaten of bread, and they can't understand it because as the passage describes, it says Ish kefisron chalamoi. Each person's dreaming the opposite person's dream. Hamashke va'ofe. Whose dream are they dreaming? They're not dreaming each other's dreams. They're dreaming their servants' dreams. Do you see that? Meaning who should be killed in this whole equation of four is the baker and the Sar HaMashkim. But they're dreaming the opposite dreams. The Sar HaMashkim is dreaming about being reinstated, and the Sar HaOfim is dreaming about being killed. But that's the opposite. They're dreaming about what should be applicable to their servants. Is that interesting? See what's happening over here? That's why there are four people in this jail. And Yosef says, you're right. Technically speaking, you're right. But something strange is about to happen. You see, when Pharaoh throws this great birthday bash, right, the first birthday we hear about in Tanakh, it is interesting that the passage describes it in the Yitzchakim, and it says, Vayas mishte lechol avodov. The feast was for all who? For all of his servants. What happened to the ministers? There are no sarim in Pharaoh's court. There are no higher ups. There's no masters. Says the Malvim. Yes, you know what's happening? Is Paro said, today, on my birthday, we're going to treat everybody like servants. Everybody like servants. Well, that's very good for the drinks master. Because that means to say that he's no longer liable. But for the baker, that's not good. Because that means he is liable. Do you see what's happened over here? There's been a shift from the underling to the supervisor, which happens on Pharaoh's birthday. That's what's happening. And now you say to yourself, that's crazy. Why would Pharaoh do that? Like, what kind of sane king? We don't have to assume that he's sane. But what kind of sane king would do that? Why would it be that he's going to shift responsibilities, that the supervisors are going to be treated like the underlings at this birthday party? Why would he do that? Yosef asked the same question, and he answers that question. Let's take a look in the Pesukim again. Yosef answers that question. We come back to the Pesukim. On in the second set of dreams over here, in Bereshis, Perek Men, when Yosef answers this dream, and everybody is astounded, why is it I'm dreaming this wrong dream for myself, which should be applicable to my underlings, Yosef says the following, in Pasuk Yodalad, Ki, because, why are you dreaming this? Why is this strange play of events happening? Im Zachartani, Itcha, Kasher Yitavlach. You know why you got this dream? Is so that you should remember me. Why is Pharaoh doing this? Do you see what Yosef is doing? Yosef once again is inserting himself into the dream. Yosef believes that he is part of the interpretation of this dream, says the Malbim. He believes, why is the Paros doing this equalization, which is going to shift the denim of these two people? And why was he the person to know this? Because you should know to remind Pharaoh about me, so I should get out. Because Yosef believed that he was part of a greater picture that was unfolding. And the only reason this is happening is so you should remind me. You should remind Pharaoh about me. Yosef, once again, is part of the interpretation. This wasn't simply, and now that I've done you a favor, you know, show me a little favor. Show me a little bit of graciousness. That wasn't what he was saying. He was saying that's the reason this is happening as well. Now, interestingly enough, he went too far this time. This particular time, Yosef was criticized. The Malbim says that he mentions it twice. Many of the Forshim say, you should remember me and mention me to Pharaoh. He's a little excessive about this. His ishtadlus might have been saying it once. But apparently Yosef was a little... Yosef put himself in... inputted himself to this dream too far. And for that he was punished and he had a little more of a detention in the jail. But nonetheless, what are we seeing? We're seeing the notion that when Yosef interprets dreams, Yosef doesn't just simply look at it as a portent for the future. Yosef looks at it and says, well, how am I part of this? Why was I the one to have access to this dream, and how am I part of this dream? And that's how he's getting there to the future. The same thing's happening. And now we reverse. Now we reverse to the first two dreams of Yosef. Now this gets really, really dark now. Okay, because Yosef now has these two dreams about his brothers. And his brothers are very upset about these dreams. Yosef doesn't interpret them right then. Actually, Yosef doesn't really seem to give a stab at them right yet. He does. Yosef does interpret his dreams, but later on. See, what happens over here is something quite strange. Is Yosef is talking about grains. The land of Canaan does not subsist on agricultural farming, or certainly not the brothers. It subsists on shepherding, which means to say his dream must be talking about another land. Which land is that? A land which does subsist on agricultural farming, which is Egypt. So it means to say that Yosef's dream must not be referring to Canaan, even though his brothers understand that think that it is talking about now. Yosef is talking about a future. And if you go a little further, if you read that first dream carefully, Yosef's dream that he makes the announcement. So go back to the very, very, very beginning, where Yosef talks about his dreams. In Pasuk Zion, he says, listen to a word which repeats itself three times in this Pasuk. V'hine anachnu ma'almim ma'almim b'soch ha'sadeh. We are gathering grains in the fields. V'hine alkam alam osi v'gam nitzava. And my grains stood up and remained standing. And behold, your grains bow down to mine. What's the word that repeats itself three times? Vehine. And behold, Yosef is telling three stages of a dream. Notice this. Let's be careful here. Yosef is saying three things are going to happen, right? Vehine, vehine, vehine. There are three heralds that he's making to the public. Number one is that we're going to be besoy chasadeh. Right, we're going to be in the context of a field. We're going to be somewhere else. In that somewhere else where there is a field, my grain is going to stand. But the word nitzava doesn't just mean to stand. Nitzava means to say remain standing. The word nitzav in Tanakh is usually used as an abrasive description of power. Right, dasan and aviram, nitzavim. It's an abrasive expression of power that's going to stand. I'm going to stand up. And number three is you're going to be submitting to me. Isn't that interesting? And that's what the brothers ask him. They say, wait a second, how can it be that you're going to abrasively take control and we're going to submit to you? Those are different loshons, hamashol and timloch. Mashol means powerful control, dominion, autocracy, and maloch means we submit to a king. How can it be both? Yosef is describing stages of what's about to happen, but Yosef doesn't interpret it. He does interpret it later on in his life. Where does he interpret it later on in his life? This is what happens in this week's parasha. Take a look at the pasuk. Let's flip forward. Let's reverse into the future. Source 12. Vayizkor Yosef es hachalamos asher chalam lahem. Vayomer lahem raglim atem lirois es ervas aretz basem. One day Yosef is sitting there in his palace, and into the gates of Egypt walk 11 men, or actually 10 men, and they're looking for grain. And he looks at them and he recognizes them. They don't recognize him, and he remembers the dreams. And without skipping a beat, the pasuk says, he calls them spies. Why is he calling them spies? Because Yosef realizes something, as the Ramban says. The Ramban asks on this, and many of the Farshim address this over here. What's really going on in Yosef's mind? He realizes that the dreams are now unfolding, and all those dreams of the young man that everybody dismissed and said were not worth it are now suddenly opening up. What's happening? He realizes that it's upon him, it's incumbent upon him to make those dreams happen, not just to witness the future. And has the dream happened?
Yeah.
The answer is no. Why has the dream not happened? How many grain bundles should there be? There should be 11 grain bundles. There's only 10. Binyamin's not here. Why is he calling Meraglim? Because what is he doing? He's getting Binyamin to come there. Why can't he say to his brothers, guys, reunion, it's me, look, we take off the crown. Look, it's me, it's Yosef. Why can't he do that? Because let's say what happens if he does that right now, says Ramban. What's going to happen is his father will immediately get onto the next train and go straight down to Egypt, and everybody will have a reunion. But there were two dreams. The first dream is that it's going to be only the 11 brothers. The second dream is the parents. Yosef now realizes he needs to orchestrate reality in a way that the brothers bow down first and then the father. How can he do that without the father coming? The only way to do it is by force. Remember the first stage of that dream was, Koma alim wasiva gam nitzava, it's going to stand up strong, I'm going to have power over you. This is stage two of the dream. We're in a new field. Now the grain is standing strong, and now it needs to be 11 brothers. I'm going to force you to find a way, by hook or by crook, that the 11 brothers are going to come down here. Yosef is not interpreting the dreams. Yosef is living the dreams. Yosef is using the action item in the dream. Do you see this? It's the same pattern. He needs to get his brothers there. He can't tell his father until they all bow down. Do they get there? The answer is yes. And then he releases, and then he allows his father back in. Now, how far does this go? So, just to get to how powerful this is, and we'll see how dark it can get. When ultimately, Yosef does tell his brothers that it's him, and his father does come down. Remember the whole episode, and his father comes down and bows down to Yosef, and they cry. It's interesting, you know, at that point in time, if you read the Pesukim very carefully, let me see if I included them in the sources today. Here we go. Take a look in source 14. The Pesukim are, this is later on in Parshas Vayigash. So as Jacob is descending from Canaan, here Yosef saddles his chariot, and he goes to meet his father. And he weeps on his father's shoulder. I feel like I can die now, seeing that you're still alive. What a powerful thing. The problem is it doesn't say, wait. So it says, oh, you're right. So I'm inserting. I'll tell you why in a second. It says, it's interesting that Yaakov is not doing anything while Yosef's crying. Is that interesting? Meaning it says that Yosef is crying on Yaakov's shoulders, but it doesn't say Yaakov's doing anything. So Chazal famously insert over here that he was saying Kriya Shema. Right? You know, it was that time of day, right? No, there's a little more than that than why Yaakov was doubling. So here we go. You're right. It wasn't about timing. Something really terribly sad is happening over here. Yosef believes that his dreams are ultimately his mission, and he needs to do everything possible to get his dreams fulfilled, right? And that's why he's going to even withhold that information, torture his brothers. According to this is the interpretation of the Ramban / the Netziv, Rav Nefari Tzayur of Berlin, where he reads this. But let's see how far it goes. He knows the following. Take a look in source in the next source. Bereshis, this is I actually put the wrong one in here. I apologize, I put the wrong Netziv over here. Let's do the Netziv outside. The Netziv says the following. He realizes that in order to close the circle of these two dreams, his father needs to bow to him. But that's a very disrespectful thing. Meaning, his father is, you know, a towering figure, an aristocrat of society. His own father, how can he make it, how can he orchestrate it that his father should bow to him? So Yosef has a special trick that he's going to do. You know what he does? And this is what Netziv says. He goes out and he gets the chariot of the king. He goes out and he dresses himself in the king's garments so that he approaches his father looking like the king of Egypt. And what's going to happen? His father's going to bow down to him without realizing that it was Yosef, inadvertently fulfilling the dream without insulting his father. That's what Yosef's trying to do. And when they meet, Yosef weeps on his father's shoulders. Yosef's father, Yaakov, can't say anything. Why can't Yaakov say anything? Because from day one, v'aviv shomaris adavar, Yaakov believed in those dreams. Yosef was treating him as if he didn't believe in those dreams. He was treating Yaakov like an outsider who needed to be tricked into bowing to his own son. Yaakov was so painfully hurt that all he could do was say, Shema Yisrael, Yichud Hashem. Even the worst things, that my own son, after 22 years, doesn't trust me enough to bow down to him and has to dress up like the king to make me do this. I can only say Shema Yisrael, I can't even cry. And Yosef weeps, realizing that he went too far. That's what Tziv says. How far do you go to make your dreams a reality? That's how far Yosef went, because he wanted his father to bow down. He didn't realize, and he didn't trust his father sufficiently to know that Yaakov Avinu always did believe that he could interpret those dreams, okay, that those dreams would come to be. What's the key? What's the common thread running through all of the dreams in Yosef's life? Is Yosef doesn't believe dreams are just a flash of inspiration or about the future. Yosef believes that the dreams are waiting to be fulfilled. And somehow, some way, you need to do something to make it happen. Whether it be telling the Pharaoh, whether it be Pharaoh, I'm going to take this place, or whether it be going to manipulate the brothers into a way to fulfill these dreams. That's what you're getting Yosef. And we see, interestingly enough, to be fair and subtle, that sometimes it works. And sometimes it goes too far. And that's the balance that we have in Yosef. One last thing, and just a story we'll close with. And that is that Rav Meir Shapiro, famously the Lublina Rav who established the Daf Yomi cycle that we have earlier on, I believe it was the end of the 20s when it first started. So when he came to a particular town, he came to a particular town and he found there was a particular rebbetzin there. Immediately he asked to speak to her. And he goes, okay, well, he was a very famous person. He came up and he spoke to this particular rebbetzin and he says to her, do you remember that when we were kids we used to play together? And she says, I do remember that actually. You know, when we were little, you know, 5 and 6 year olds. And he says, do you remember that when I was with the playgroup, I used to always tell them about this dream that I had. And the dream was I was going to have this major project which was going to transform the whole world and we're all going to learn daf and finish. And we're going to finish Shas in a certain amount of time. And she said, yes. She says, do you remember that you and your friends used to always mock me? She says, yes. He says, well, I want you to tell us something. One of the reasons why I fought so hard for this to happen was because of all those children when I was 5 years old who said it wouldn't happen. He says, just be careful as a parent never to mock the dreams of your child. Because you never know what they really are capable of. And that's what Yosef was saying over here. But Yosef underestimated his own father, who did believe in him. Anyways, with this we'll end. Thank you very much. Yes, honestly.
What did you want to say about Macbeth?
I'm in here, sure.